This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
They're still showing up to work, perhaps replying to texts, even posting some happy snaps online, but something's off and you can feel it. Well, what is it? Well, Gary Fay is a crisis intervention specialist. He says we're missing the quiet signals of emotional collapse. And today on Drive, Gary joins us to explain what a silent breakdown looks like, how to spot the signs in friends, family and colleagues, and crucially, how to step in without making things worse. Gary, welcome to Drive.
Thanks, Warren. It's great to be here and to continue this important conversation.
What exactly is a silent breakdown? And how does it differ, I suppose, from what we typically imagine when someone's struggling?
Yeah, often the silent breakdown is sometimes the lead up to what we would more commonly see, the very overt active actions that really tend to make people understand that somebody is breaking down. But those silent characteristics are really harmful in and of themselves. And, you know, often these can bubble around for, you know, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, just slowly underneath the surface, whittling away at somebody's confidence and ability to live a fulfilled life.
Is it becoming more common in Australia?
I think it is becoming more common. I think as things like the cost of living crisis continues, and people are hurting out there in a range of different ways, not just financially, but, you know, relationships are difficult. There's a lot of social pressures on people these days, and all of these things can take its toll underneath the surface. And while we tend to manage as best we can, sometimes that will bubble over.
Now, Gary, you've been quite open about your mental health in the past. What did you experience?
Yeah, as I mentioned, that, you know, some of these things can bubble along for 10 years. And, you know, I had a quite successful career in the Australian Federal Police. And the strange thing was, it was an 18-year career, but the last 10 years of that, the most successful part of my career, were actually the worst parts of my personal life. I was breaking down. I was suffering with a major depressive disorder, and that led to a gambling addiction that cost me $2 million and cost me my career, my reputation, and had me very seriously considering the value of my own life. And that's probably why I'm so committed to these underlying silent stresses that bubble around. I didn't even realize myself for probably 7 to 8 years that this was an issue, and you know, I fell hard, and hopefully people can start to recognise these conditions beforehand.
Gary, did those close to you, did they notice these sort of silent changes in you?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I think in hindsight, just about everybody did notice them. But, you know, in the environment that I was in, it was an alpha-dominated environment. People didn't want to speak up and ask questions. And while they noticed changes, a lot of the changes were subtle. Some of them didn't even appear as though I was having issues. In fact, I was still receiving awards at work. I was committing a lot of time and energy into performance models, so work, training, exercise, those sorts of things. So for a lot of people, it looked like I was just working and training harder, but all the time I was withdrawing from family events, becoming a lot more inward in my reflection and starting to miss out on some of those joys of life.
Do you think one of the reasons that people, you know, like yourself in that situation, keep showing up to work and making an effort to appear as though they're functioning and dealing with life okay, do you think part of it is the stigma around mental health and perhaps, you know, it's seen as being weak to not being coping?
Yeah, I do think that is an issue, Warren, but I also think that it's an issue personally. You know, even though we talk about the stigma being out there reflecting back onto us, I think all of us internally, even though consciously we understand that mental health is a valid thing that people confront and people have to work through, there's still some part of our own subconscious that doesn't want to admit that we're the ones that are suffering with it. And, you know, we can tend to try and block it from ourselves as much as everybody else. And often that means that we tend to try and show up in performance natures, be that work or exercise or athletics, to try and show people that we're okay, and perhaps even to show ourselves that we're okay.
What are some of the small early signs that we perhaps dismiss that someone might be heading towards deteriorating mental health?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that the people that know you the best, or if people that you know the best, you're probably the best place to recognize some of these, because a lot of the times it's not the symptom or the characteristic per se, but it's a shift in the dynamic. So for instance, if somebody is typically more jovial and more expressive and they suddenly become a bit more flat, or they suddenly become a bit more irritable, they start to withdraw within to themselves, it's the change that can actually signal that there might be an issue there. You might find somebody is starting to have difficulty following along with conversations. It might appear as though their mind is somewhere else. Trouble sleeping, forgetting things like family commitments, withdrawing from family rituals, and sudden changes in behaviour. There are some more obvious ones like the irritability and aggressiveness, those sorts of things. But sometimes those subtle ones are the ones that we tend to miss or gloss over.
We're talking to Gary Fay, a crisis intervention specialist, about the rise of silent breakdowns and how we can better support people who seem fine on the outside but perhaps struggling underneath. Gary, I suppose one of the most important questions is, what's a helpful way to start the conversation when you're worried about someone?
Yeah, I think the best way to approach it is with a level of curiosity and also with some self-compassion. I think a lot of people fear asking somebody if they're okay because they don't know what to do about it if the person says, no, I'm not okay. And I think it's important for people to realise that you just have to be human. You don't have to be a doctor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. You just have to be human. You have to be caring and you have to be curious and not try and solve people's problems. Some of the steps that you could take, try and create a safe space. So don't confront somebody in the middle of an issue, but rather ask them for a conversation at a later time, perhaps on a walk on the weekend. Use open questions and express some of that curiosity about asking what it has been hard for you, or is there anything you'd like to talk through, rather than trying to diagnose. And then you want to offer some low-pressure support. You don't want to enforce somebody to go and seek help necessarily, but just offer the fact that you are there. You're available if they want to have a conversation. Maybe engage them in an activity that can help with mental health, like asking them to join you on a walk or in a conversation. And some of these things can help people feel like they're seen, that their condition or their feelings are validated, and that it's normal for anybody to go through this. And as I said, I think really at the core of it, it's just a human experience that we all go through and we can all support somebody with.
Gary, that's really interesting because I'm guilty of this. I'd go straight to solution mode and think, right, I've got to fix this for them and try and come up with solutions. But that's quite dangerous, isn't it? What else should we avoid that could potentially result in them shutting down and not talking to us?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that none of us like to see our loved ones suffering. Yeah. So the default for probably everybody is to try and solve, because often when you're outside of the issue, you can see some solutions that perhaps the person struggling can't see, and we really want them to get there very quickly. But, you know, it is important to have that level of curiosity and that openness, and also to perhaps avoid being very direct, telling them that you notice, I've seen that you are, really accusational type of conversation. It's more about trying to understand. If you can put yourself in a place that you'd like to understand better what they're going through, you'll find that the conversation flows a lot more freely. But when you challenge somebody, often their defences will kick in and you'll get the standard I'm fine answer, or leave me alone, or I'll get through this, and then it's shut down the conversation.
Gary, we've spoken, I suppose, about those close to us and if we notice these changes, but what about in the workplace? What more needs to happen to build workplaces where people feel supported, even when they're not waving that flag for help?
I think culture is a big thing. I mean, organisations are trying to achieve good cultures in their workplaces, but a good culture in your workplace is less about what you write up on the wall and more about how people feel about going to work on a Monday morning. And if you can create an environment where people feel safe, people feel heard, people have agency, people feel like they can come forward with any issues, be they mental health or workplace issues or anything like that. Those cultures are the ones that actually have higher performing engagement from staff and better outcomes. So, you know, to be honest, it's actually in an organisation's benefit to create these cultures, to create the safe space. And, you know, it's one thing to have it up on the wall, but you have to demonstrate it. You know, when somebody does step forward with an issue, it really is beholden on the organisation and the executive level of that organisation to demonstrate what is the right way to move forward.
Gary, if someone's listening and, you know, they are struggling at the moment, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, the first thing that I'd suggest to anybody is just take a breath. Now, this can be literally, as in a few simple breaths, some deep breaths, perhaps some things like a box breathing or a physiological sigh, some big breaths in and some, you know, really long deep breaths out, can sometimes just relieve a little bit of stress in the moment. But also figuratively, just take a breath, take a step back and try and look at the problem or the issue through somebody else's eyes. Sometimes it's very difficult when you feel like you're in the center of the problem, but if you could imagine considering what looking at yourself as a third person or perhaps a best friend would be going through, that can offer you a little bit of relief and, again, the chance to perhaps make a conscious choice to move forward. And, you know, as I advise everybody, talk about it. A problem shared is really a problem halved, and you'll be very surprised at how quickly anybody in your world is willing to listen and support you. It doesn't matter if it's a best friend, a loved one, a doctor, a psychologist, or just somebody on the street. If you can open up your mouth and share it, you'll find that you yourself will feel a lot more relief and realise that everybody out there is the same as you.
Gary, great to chat with you, and thank you for sharing your story today also.
I appreciate it, Warren, and continue the conversation as you guys are doing. I'm happy to come on anytime.
Thank you so much. That is Gary Fay, Crisis Intervention Specialist. And if this topic has raised any issues for you, you can call Lifeline anytime on 131114. There is help available. Or head to joy.org.au/support.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.